They come from the past and the future.
There is nothing wrong with your radio.
Listen.
With the single most important interview since God talked to Moses.
The voices you are hearing are the voices from Krypton.
This is Voices from Krypton. I'm Ed Gross, and Tom Hiddleston is charming. How else do you explain away the fact that as Loki he can threaten all of humanity yet remain likable in the Avengers? Or that as Sir Thomas Sharpe in Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak, he can do all sorts of horrible things, yet with the barest of redemptive actions can sway the audience back to his side? That's where my exclusive interview with the actor begins. As to Crimson Peak, Hiddleston's character marries young author Edith Cushing in the latter part of the 19th century. He brings her to his crumbling mansion to live with him and his sister, Lady Lucille Sharpe. Naturally, it isn't long before his true nature begins to be revealed, and sins of the past rise in ghostly form in search of justice. But beware of spoilers.
What is it about you, do you think, that you can do all these nasty things? Like, you could be Loki and threaten the Earth and do all this horrible stuff, and then you say, I think we'll have that drink at the end, and you're charming. What is it about you, and even as Thomas in Crimson Peak? As soon as you give even a hint of being a nice guy or trying to do the right thing, it just changes.
I don't... Well, listen,
that's a bizarre question.
You make me feel bashful. I don't know. I know with Loki there is... The thing about Loki that I think is I always found likable is his mischief. Mm. That there's some self-awareness about... He knows he's the bad guy. And I think in spite of his kind of crazed, megalomaniacal ambition, I find that sort of likable in some way. Mm-hmm. There's something about mischief and charm and his playfulness. There's a playfulness to him that's always been appealing to me in the playing of him. And perhaps that's what makes him so defeatable. You know,
yeah, good.
That's why he's never going to win. And as Sharp, I don't know. I think Thomas Sharp has initially a superficial charisma, as I said, behind which is revealed to be a darker guilt, and then behind that is a vulnerability, and then out of the vulnerability that he has a sort of capacity for decency, which I hope is a character arc that people can get behind. In terms of what it is about me, I try to play every character honestly, mm-hmm. and that's all I can do.
Jessica pointed out that when once that the truth was revealed and she's suddenly in the nightgown, it was a moment from that point on where the character was finally free to be herself for the first time. Was there a moment like that for Thomas? Do you think that once the truth was out, did he go through some sort of change? Besides the fact that we know he fell in love with her.
But yes. The change, I think, starts at the post office mm-hmm. when they get snowed in. I think that's when it really falls for her. And I think there is a moment where I think Thomas and Lucille both feel there's a sense of relief when the truth is out in the open. Mm. But what's interesting is how they react differently to the truth. Lucille feels a sense of kind of... I think Lucille steps into her power. And it's also when Thomas steps away from Lucille and decides to act completely independently of her. Without spoiling anything, the way you see him engage with Charlie Hunnam's character, the way you see him engage with Mia's character, everything from that point on is a decision that is independent of Lucille. And that's when I think he redeems himself.
Yeah, he does. Because frankly, if I was Mia walking into that house, being carried into a house that has no ceiling, first thing I do is say, can we leave? There's something not right here. Can we leave?
You know? Yeah, yeah. But anyway. You can't even put a roof over my head.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, but you've worked with so many directors, but I'm curious, is there something different when you work with these guys who are really, for lack of a better word, fanboys, like a Guillermo or Joss Whedon? I mean, these guys, do they bring something extra to the table in a sense. I mean, every filmmaker's passionate, but...
That's true. I mean, they each... Guillermo and Joss each have their own distinct rigor. Mm. That's what I found. That's what I find extraordinary about both of them. It's not the same kind of rigor, and it's not the same taste, but there is a integrity to their imagination. They conceive of the worlds they build with a precision and attention to detail. And I think that there's a kind of, that's a creative discipline, mm-hmm. is to come up with an idea and then, and rather than just sling it into the film, they examine it from every angle and really shape it. And that's just discipline in the end. And curiosity, chasing that curiosity to its end point.
Yeah, because I've watched some of these things. I mean, not to harp on Joss, but I watch how scenes have so much going on in one frame. And how? How is it possible that somebody could have coordinated all of this? But
in the end, it's all about imagination.
Yeah,
it's all about having no limit on your imagination, seeing where it takes you.
Now, Guillermo is such a visual director. I mean, one of the things I want to talk to him about is just the fact that the sound effects even were so like detailed, the dripping and the creaking and the thing. Is that a different experience too, working with somebody who is so focused on, I'm not saying at expense of anything else, but is such a distinct vision, a visual style?
It's a relief, actually.
Is it?
Because we could all feel his authority. Mm-hmm. And it's a relief when you feel like you have a very steady guiding hand. You know, that the man steering the boat knows exactly where he's going, and it becomes very easy to follow orders in a way. Because you just want to be part of the experience, make the journey smooth, and so it's actually a relief. It's a relief to have someone of his like authority, who's driving the thing.
Fair enough. A double-sided question is, you know, and I know it's a cliched question, but you know what you look for in a script. But I'm also curious what you think as an actor you bring. Obviously, you're going to act differently to different scripts. Mm. But is there a quality about yourself that you feel you bring to scripts? So it's what do you look for, and is there something about you that you feel you're bringing?
When I read scripts, it's like I have a gut feeling about whether I want to be involved or not. Mm. So hard to explain. It's like trying to explain why you want to go for a burger or have a fish and chips or a roast chicken. You know, it's you just know what you're in the mood for. So when I choose roles, it's a gut feeling. It's usually to do with the complexity of the characterization, or the sort of the courage of the themes, mm-hmm. in it, in a way. But again, I'm generalizing, so sure. It's so hard to say.
I know.
All I can say about myself is that I'm a worker. And I know I work. I just work really hard and, I don't stop until it's done. So I know I don't know how that manifests. You'd have to ask other directors what the... I can never quite see what I bring.
You have some phone numbers? I'll give them a number.
But I understand why you're asking it, though. I don't know. It must be hard. It's always hard to see yourself from the perspective of other people.
Sure.
What a director once said to me, you never know the answer to that question until 10 years later. Which is that...
You have some perspective with that?
Yeah, thing, that you go, you look back and you go, oh, I understand why I was drawn to that material or why those people were drawn to me in support of that material at that time. And you can kind of join the dots and work out why it was that you're the right guy for certain things.
I'm Ed Gross. Thanks for listening to Voices from Krypton.
The Voices from Krypton.